Good afternoon. Sorry about the delay. We had to just confer on what paperwork we had and what we didn't. Boy, I feel like the school teacher, like nobody wants to sit up front. Come on, we don't bite. I think I'm going to make everybody in the back row who always sits there on their Blackberries sit up front. If you want your bills heard, you need to move up front. Anyway, welcome to the always exciting Senate Committee.
And
yes, Christina leading the way.
Senate Bill 663. I think we've got a taker there.
I like people who listen to directions. So good afternoon. Welcome to the Never Boring Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. I'm going to first let you know that Senator Boquist has been excused. He's at National Guard duty.
Military duty.
And he is excused. Also, we are going to carry over the work sessions on Senate Bill 102, Senate Bill 103, and Senate Bill 513 until Thursday, April 2nd. And hopefully, we will have the paperwork then. And hopefully, our fiscal folks are listening intently to that. We are going to do work sessions first on Senate Bill 105, Senate Bill 193, Senate Bill 194, and then we will have a public hearing on Senate Bill 663 and a possible work session, and a public hearing on Senate Bill 566. So just want to let folks know, and hopefully we will plan to get out of here on time. So with that, I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 105, and Beth, can you please remind us about this bill?
Senate Bill 105 increases maximum civil penalties that could be imposed from $10,000 to $25,000 per day. There's an amendment before you, the -2 amendment, that clarifies that any prior violations of pollutant control laws may be considered as a factor in calculating a penalty. It extends the operative date of the Act until January 1st, 2011, and it authorizes the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt rules before January 1st, 2011.
Okay, thank you.
There's no revenue, and there is a fiscal statement issued.
Okay, thank you. I am going to ask the department to come up. I see that Greg Aldrich from the DEQ.
Les,
thank you for coming back. If you could walk us through the amendment, please. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Les Carlo. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor at DEQ's Office of Compliance and Enforcement. With me is Greg Aldrich, our legislative liaison. Senator Dinkfelder, you had asked for a description of the -2 amendments to the bill. The primary purpose of these -2 amendments was in response to a suggestion that John Ledger of AOI had made during the public hearing a couple of weeks ago, and he'd asked because of the economic situation, the climate that we find ourselves in, that we extend the effective date of the increase in the penalty maximums, and that's the primary purpose of this -2 amendments. It also clarifies that the department may begin rulemaking to implement those penalty maximums should it see fit. Incidentally, that's not currently on DEQ's priority rulemaking list, but that opens the possibility if DEQ were to want to do that.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask that. So this is a new rulemaking authority under this provision. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Any questions before we go to motions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hess.
So the operative date is extended to January 1st, 2011 from
the existing bill, which was...
Which was what?
Lost 2010.
2010.
Mm-hmm. So I understand the clarification on rulemaking, but... Are we extending the rule with the logic being that this is easier on business? I mean, this isn't like a new regulation or a fee. This is a fine. We're extending the deadline because we want people who are responsible for spills and environmental accidents to not have to be subjected to them. I mean, to me, there's a disconnect between the business climate and environmental mistakes.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Haas. The reason that we had proposed this amendment was in response to AOI's suggestion. The realities of it is that it would have some effect on the current penalties that we assess, but it wouldn't have a great effect, and to implement higher penalties, it would require some rulemaking from the department. That rulemaking wouldn't be excessively resource-intensive, but it would require some public comment and notice, and the reality is it's not currently on our rulemaking schedule, so by the time the department determined the priority for this rulemaking, involved the public, engaged them, and adopted these rules, it would probably be this long or longer. In any way, so this was really in response to AOI's suggestion as a middle ground.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any other questions? All right, thank you, gentlemen, and I will accept a motion for this amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd move a dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 105.
Okay, thank you. Senator Atkinson moves to adopt the dash 2 amendments dated March 26, 2009. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I'd move the bill as amended to the floor.
Do you want to with something?
Nope.
Okay.
I move the bill as amended to the floor.
So without a recommendation?
Without recommendation.
Okay, so there's a motion. Is there on the table now to move Senate Bill 105 as amended to the floor with no recommendation. So, is there any objection?
Discussion, I think, is the
I'm sorry, is there a discussion?
Right. And yes. Then I think that the procedure here, Madam Chair, is to go ahead and take a vote on this, and we'll see what happens on the vote, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Okay. So, is there any discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, okay. I'm going to, at least right now, oppose this bill. And I know it's going to go forward, and I have two main questions I still want to get answered before it's on the floor.
Do you want to put those questions on the record?
Twofold. One is I have a hard time. My experience about 8 years ago with DEQ was working overtime for a guy who had a tank that he bought on a piece of property that was being leaked. And DEQ tried to put this guy out of business with these gigantic fines, and it took about 18 months to undo all this because the guy, and he bought the property, it was just a mess. Anyway, so in the staff major summary where we have oil tank violations, I have a bad taste in my mouth, and I have no problems with making polluters pay. I have no issues with the business concessions on this bill. I am worried for a little guy that gets himself in a big trouble in an agency that wants to clamp down on him. And so that's my concern.
Okay. All right. Thank you for putting those comments on record. So we have a motion on the table. And just to recall here, the motion is to move Senate Bill 105 as amended to the floor without recommendation. Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator Brzozowski?
No.
Senator Haas?
No.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
No.
Chair Dinkfelder?
No. So the motion fails.
Madam Chair?
Senator Brzozowski?
I move Senate Bill 105 as amended by the dash 2 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Brzozowski moves Senate Bill 105 as amended with the dash 2s to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this motion? No? Okay. Without any discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Brzozowski?
Aye.
Senator Haas?
Aye.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
No.
Chair Dinkfelder?
Aye. And actually, you are supposed to call Boquist, but he's excused. Okay. Just for the record. So with that, the motion passes. I will ask Senator Haas if he would be so kind as to carry this to the Senate floor.
Yep.
And with that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 105. Okay. We will open up a work session on Senate Bill 103. I'm sorry. Oops. we'll open up, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 103 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 193.
Chair Dingfelder and committee members, Senate Bill 193, you heard on February 10th. There is a Dash 1 amendment before you, and it authorizes the Water Resource Department to develop an integrated state water resource strategy instead of requiring the Water Resource Department to develop a state water resource strategy. Requires the Water Resource Commission to review and update the plan every 5 years. Requires that the Water Resource Commission give notice to the Environmental Quality Commission prior to adopting and updating the strategy rather than in the bill. It was consulting with the EQC.
Okay, and we have the Dash 1 amendment, so I was going to ask the department if they could come up and talk about the amendments. And these amendments were at the request of the chair, so I appreciate your responsiveness on that.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman with the Water Resources Department. And you have before you today the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 193. And we were asked to provide some language to these amendments with the in anticipation that few or little fiscal resources would be available to carry out the Integrated Water Resources Strategy in this next biennium. So what you'll see are a few points in front of you that change the language in the bill from a shall to a may, and remove deadlines, hard deadlines, for the first report to come out. They also remove some specific content requirements so that the department is able to inch forward as resources become available to work on this. And as previously mentioned, backs out the Environmental Quality Commission from an obligation to ratify the resulting strategy and instead just receive the report because of the potential staff time that might require in preparation for a commission meeting. This amendment also inserts the phrase, or the word integrated, throughout so that it's an integrated water resources strategy. And those are the comments that we prepared and sent forward.
And colleagues, I will comment that we had, since the Water Resources Department's budget is up in our Natural Resources Subcommittee budget committee right now, we spent quite a bit of time talking about their budget and will for the next few days. And so there are many policy bills that have budget implications, and the discussions probably will all occur down in the Ways and Means Committee about resources. And I think that it's appropriate that this moves down to Ways and Means as part of that discussion, as another bill we're going to hear. This is an effort. Many folks in this room worked for almost a year on this effort, and we feel like it's important to keep that discussion moving forward. Appreciate the hard work of many of the folks who worked on this effort. And so I, you know, thank the department for their time and investment, along with the governor's office who worked on this as well, and all the stakeholders. So with that, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that that the committee adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 193.
Senator Przanski moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated March 10, 2009. Is there any discussion or any questions? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Bowman?
Is excused.
Senator Przanski?
Aye.
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
No.
Chair Dingfelder?
Aye. With that, the motion carries, and the Dash 1s are amended, or adopted, I should say.
Madam Chair, I move that we send Senate Bill 193 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 193 as amended with the Dash 1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boquist?
Is excused.
Senator Przanski?
Aye.
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
No.
Chair Dingfelder?
Aye. And with that, the motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, moving right along, I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 194.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 194 You have the dash two amendments in front of you, and it replaces the text of the bill. It provides definitions and requires that the Water Resource Department report to the Legislative Assembly biannually regarding the number of significant diversions in high-priority watersheds that have installed and are using water measuring devices. It requires that if a measurement of all significant diversions within high-priority watersheds has been achieved, that the department report the number of significant diversions within the state that have been installed and are using the devices.
Okay. And Brenda is up here still. Thank you. If you want to briefly describe the amendments again, so that's something that I know that you've worked on over the last couple of weeks.
Madam Chair, if you'll recall in our original presentation before the committee, the water measurement strategy is one that our commission formally established in the year 2000 and is part of the department program today. We have identified as part of an inventory 2,200 such points in high-priority watersheds throughout the state that we would like to have measuring devices installed in. The original bill was meant to codify this program and to request the needed resources to implement this program at a more robust pace. But again, with these dash two amendments, we've been asked to provide some language that anticipates little or no physical resources for this. And so what this dash two amendment does is very well define our program as it stands today with the definitions that you have before you in section one, and then in the next section asks us to report on our progress in this program each legislative session until the program is fully implemented.
Thank you for that explanation. Okay, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 2 amendments dated March 25th, 2009. Senate Bill 194.
Senator Przanski, thank you for that motion. He moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 25th, 2009. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Buckley?
He's excused.
Senator Przanski?
Aye.
Senator Hass?
Aye.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
No.
Chair Dinkfelder?
Aye. That the motion carries and the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 194 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments be sent out with a due pass recommendation to the floor, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 194 as amended with the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? One thing I will mention, committee members, is we had quite a discussion about water measurement in the Ways and Means Committee today, and I'm sure we'll continue to have discussions as this bill moves down there again. We are looking at the overall Water Resources Department budget and making sure that all programs are funded to the full extent possible, and certainly we're hopeful that we'll be able to figure out how to continue moving forward with the progress the department has made in water measurement, and appreciate the work that the department has done so far, and we will be having further discussion about this and your budget in the coming weeks. Okay. With that, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boquist?
He's excused.
Senator Przanski?
Aye.
Senator Hass?
Aye.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
No.
Chair Dinkfelder?
Yes. Aye. That the motion carries and or passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. That I would close the work session on Senate Bill 194. I think we're done with work sessions for right now anyway, and we're going to move on to a public hearing. We're going to move on to a public hearing on Senate Bill 663. So I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 663, and Beth will give us an overview of the bill.
Senate Bill 663 changes the method for filling a vacancy on a board of directors of an irrigation district.
Okay, and Senator Przanski, since your name is on it, do you want to say a word or two?
Madam Chair, I was just approached as to the need to have a change in how the office vacancies are filled for the board, and I agreed to be a sponsor of the bill.
Okay.
Made a lot of sense to me, and we have the Certified Smart First Achiever moving up in line to
yes,
give us the official word.
Thank you, Senator. And with that, we will call up the first row, Christina McNitt. And also, I see the Oregon Water Congress is still lurking in the back, but you're welcome to come up. Okay, so you don't, I thought there were two people signed up here. Okay, so That's all we have signed up for Senate Bill 663. You're it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Christina McNitt representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress. Senate Bill 663 was introduced at our request to provide clear direction to irrigation districts when they need to fill a vacancy in their district board of directors. Irrigation districts are considered local governments, and they follow their own set of statutes found under ORS Chapter 545 for the conduct of their elections, which includes the nomination and election of their boards of directors. But these statutes, however, are silent with respect to filling a board vacancy. Currently, when a vacancy occurs, districts have relied on statutes that direct special districts, generally found in ORS 198-320. Senate Bill 663 basically lifts that language from ORS 198-320 that addresses a board vacancy and specifically adds the same language provisions to irrigation district election laws. So when you have a vacancy occurs, the remaining board members appoint a member to serve out the rest of the year. There's a special election. Someone's appointed to fill or elected to fill the remainder of that vacancy term. And that's about the sum total.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for Christina on this?
Thank you.
I do have a question. We're not going to let you off that
easy.
So how often is do vacancies come up, and how often is there turnover? And I'm curious about this because having worked for a soil and water conservation district and seen that. So how often do these vacancies come up? And
Madam Chair and members, I don't know if I have actual specifics for that, but they occur when, say, someone moves, they move outside of the district, maybe they sell their property, they're no longer subject to the fees of the irrigation district, and so they no longer qualify to be a board director. I happen to have worked for an irrigation district specifically out in the East County for 8 years, and we've had one vacancy, so I've kind of gone through this myself. It just depends on the board. One of the complications is that most of these district boards are composed of three directors. So if you lose one, that really is a loss to the functionality of the board. So it's important that we have clear direction about how to fill a vacancy.
And just to follow up to that, under subsections, subsection one under section two, it talks about if the district has been divided. So can you give a little bit of explanation to the committee members about that?
Chair Dingfelder and members, I actually anticipated you might have that question. And for your perspective, I think the best way to describe it is that a division inside an irrigation district is very similar to a precinct inside a House or Senate district.
And how often does that occur?
The divisions?
Yeah. I mean, how often, how many divisions? Is it a set amount of divisions within a district, or it's, I mean, how is that determined?
Madam Chair.
Because we have, obviously, for our own districts, we know very well how that's determined. But
yeah.
How is that determined within the irrigation district?
Generally, that's determined at the inception of the district when it comes together, and they can choose whether or not they want to be a district as a whole or break into divisions. I think, generally speaking, and Anita is at the back of the room, and she's truly the certified smart person to answer questions, but I think, generally speaking, the larger districts tend to have divisions and the smaller ones don't.
Okay. I don't see her running up yet to grab the microphone. Do you want to come up and just make sure that Christina's got everything on record? Yes.
Chair Dingfelder and committee, Anita Winkler, Executive Director of the Oregon Water Resources Congress. Yes, Christina was correct. Often this happens when the district is formed. However, there is a provision that allows a district who has been under the three-director provision, you know, the district as a whole, to go through a process to divide into the districts. And they're roughly based on amount of acres.
Okay. That answers my question. Any other questions? I think we've exhausted this panel at this point. Okay. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you, and thanks for sponsoring the bill, Senator Prozanski.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Of course, there's a price. I have to probably be the carrier of the bill, too. So.
I was thinking about, actually, the vice chair.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so if the sponsor is okay with that. With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 663, and I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 663. And would somebody like to make a motion?
Madam Chair,
I move that Senate Bill 663 be referred to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Przanski has made a motion to send Senate Bill 663 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Buglis.
It's excused.
Senator Przanski.
Aye.
Senator Hess.
Aye.
Vice Chair Atkinson.
Gavel's going down.
Yes.
Chair Dinkfelder.
Aye. With that, the motion passes, and do you guys want to duke it out? Who wants to carry the bill?
I always will let the vice chair of a committee
I was
carry
thinking
the
that
weight if he was so inclined. But
thank you. I was thinking the vice chair
wax poetic.
Hasn't had the opportunity to carry very many of the bills yet from this committee, so we need to make sure that he's not slacking off. With that, Senator Atkinson, would you be so kind as to carry this bill? Since I think you have several irrigation districts in your district, correct? I'll take that as a yes. We have a carrier, Senator Atkinson. And with that, the work session on Senate Bill 663 will be closed. Moving along, we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 566. So I will open up the public hearing on 566.
Chair Dinkfelder and committee members, Senate Bill 566 requires a metropolitan service district to treat non-contiguous areas created by the urban growth boundary as discrete subregions when determining the need to modify the UGB or change the type or intensity of use.
Okay, thank you. Beth, and we do have, colleagues, this is our first gut and stuff bill for the session. For those of you in the audience who are not familiar or listening, that means that there are amendments that completely replace this bill, and we have several of them we're going to hear from today. First up, I am going to ask on the dash ones. I guess we have two amendments, so we'll hear the dash ones first. Okay. So I don't know if Senator Starr and Representative Riley want to speak on the dash ones. Or you want to speak on the dash twos?
I'll speak on both.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me have Metro come up first and describe the dash ones, and then if you guys want to come up, and then we'll take testimony on the dash ones, and then we'll do the dash twos. If that's okay time-wise. I'm seeing nodding of heads. Okay. So we have Dick Benner. Is Randy Tucker here? Or are you solo?
He's in the halls roaming.
That's quite all right.
We've got the man here.
We've got the... the brains behind the operation here, okay?
No, look at that. We're
so.
We're trying to move through this stuff.
Okay. Thank you, Dick.
Madam
you
Chair,
proceed.
Members of the committee, Richard Benner, Office of Metro Attorney, I would like to speak with you about the Dash 1 amendments. By way of background, by the way, there's testimony in about a page and a half that you can take home with you. This has to do with the priorities that are established in state law for adding land to urban growth boundaries. In the middle of the page, on my testimony under background, I've tried to abbreviate and boil down the portion of the statute that actually sets the priorities. You're probably familiar with them. Not just Metro, but anybody responsible for an urban growth boundary is directed by state law to turn to its urban reserves first to add land to the UGB, if it has any, and not many cities have urban reserves. The DLCD could probably tell you, but I bet it's maybe 4 to 6 cities around the state. If the urban reserves, if you have them, are not adequate, then you can turn to exception lands. These are mostly the rural residential lands just outside the urban growth boundary. If priority 1 and priority 2 themselves are not adequate, then you can turn to marginal land as a third priority. Only Lane County and Washington County have marginal lands. And finally, as a last priority, you can turn to farm and forest land if land and priorities 1, 2, and 3 are not adequate. So that's the priority statute. Then there's a subsection 2, and this is the subject of our concern. Subsection 2 of that statute says, if a city, or in our case, Metro, must take farm or forest land into the UGB, it must take the less productive soils before the more productive soils. We don't have a problem with that concept. I want to go on and tell you what the problem is. Last session, all of you were here and participated in one way or another in the enactment of Senate Bill 1011. Senate Bill 1011 was the Urban and Rural Reserves Bill for the metro area that established a new path for the region to designate urban reserves and rural reserves. And if you remember the legislation, it was very specific about how it would happen, what factors would have to be considered, that it would have to be done concurrently, that all four local governments would agree. It faced us with a good path, but a very challenging one. And right after the legislation passed, LCDC adopted rules to implement it, and we got right underway at the beginning of 2008. So we're about 15 months into the process of designating urban and rural reserves. And the four local governments are scheduled to make those designations by the end of the year. At the end of 2010, we will have completed our analysis of whether we need to add land to the urban growth boundary. Our expectation is that by that time we would have designated urban reserves, and we would follow the first priority in the priority statute, and we would draw our urban growth boundary land from our recently designated urban reserves. That's what our plan is. That's the expectation of all the participants in the process. So here's the problem with subsection 2. Subsection 2, and I've got the actual language as a footnote on my testimony, unlike the expectations of the participants in the development of Senate Bill 1011, in my estimation, unlike the intentions of the people who wrote the legislation that contains the priorities, the subsection 2 is susceptible to an interpretation that the soils priority applies to priority 1, priority 2, priority 3, and priority 4. And what that means is, even after we've gone through our process and designated urban reserves, we would have to, when we think about adding urban reserves to the UGB sometime later, we would have to resort them by soil capability classification if they're in farm or forest zoning. That would have the effect of essentially subverting the effort that we've had underway since embarking on the Senate Bill 1011 process of designating urban and rural reserves. What we propose to do as a solution is on the back of the page. It's in the dash one amendments. It would amend the Metro Organic Statute, Chapter 268, and add the language that you see there on the bottom of page one of the dash ones. And it's pretty straightforward. It simply says, when a district includes land designated as urban reserve under 195.145 sub 1B, that's the Senate Bill 1011 process, includes urban reserve within an urban growth boundary pursuant to the priority statute, the district is not required to consider the capability classification system or the cubic foot site class of the property as described in ORS 197.298 sub 2. Sub 2 is the subsection that we're talking about. If you were to pass this into law, then the Senate Bill 1011 process, the process of identifying urban reserves, rural reserves, and ultimate use of the urban reserves, adding it to urban growth boundary, could work as intended by Senate Bill 1011. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. And again, this is, you're speaking only on the dash ones.
Correct.
And I think what we'll do is we'll have some folks come up on the dash twos, and then if I don't know if Metro wants to come back on the dash twos later, but we can do that if we have time.
Okay.
So any questions on the dash ones or the presentation? The bill, by the way, did come through my committee on the House side when I was chair of the House.
Senate Bill 1011.
Yes. And none of, obviously, these people were on that committee, but I think Senator Przanski and Senator Atkinson, you were probably here when it came through on the Senate side. So this did come through both chambers. So appreciate you bringing that forward. Any questions, gentlemen? I guess not. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Would anybody else like to come up just to speak on the dash ones? Okay. Okay. And please state your name for the record.
Honorable Chair and committee members, my name is Sarah Jo Chaplin. I'm the city manager of Hillsborough. I also have here Pat Rebellia, my planning director, in case there are any questions. Hillsborough strongly supports the Metro-initiated Senate Bill Dash 1 amendments for 566. They clarify the regional designations of urban reserves per Senate Bill 1011 that are not required to be prioritized in accordance with the farming capabilities of soils within candidate urban reserves areas. The Senate Bill 566-1 amendments are extremely important to the successful fruition of the ongoing regional, urban, and rural reserves designation process, as they will assure that the true intent and objectives of Senate Bill 1011 relating to urban reserves designations will be accomplished.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Atkinson.
I always told Senator Starr that he had a Hillsborough accent, and you have now confirmed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I used to work in Hillsborough, and I can tell you that is not a native Hillsboroughan accent. Thank you. Okay, now we'll invite up our august guests, Senator Starr and Representative Riley, to speak on the Dash 2s. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Senator Bruce Starr, and I represent Western Washington County, the communities of Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, and North Plains. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 566, and for the record, I do support the Dash 1s as well. I think they make a great complement to the Dash 2s. We got to have a nice package at that point. What this bill really deals with is the opportunity for the communities in Western Washington County to have an economic opportunity to grow and have some sort of self-fulfilling opportunity within their community. As you know, when Metro looks at expansion of the urban growth boundary, as they're required to by law to accommodate a 20-year land supply, generally what they do is they look at the region as a whole and accommodate those needs as state law requires in the whole region. What we contemplate or propose in the Dash 2 amendments is that we would authorize but not require Metro to look at the metro region on a sub-regional basis. Back in 2004, Metro and Washington County worked together to get amendments drafted to the LCDC Goal 14 rule to basically accomplish this sub-regional tool, the sub-regional land need accommodation tool. They did that. The rule was then challenged in court, and the court basically said, you don't have the statutory authority to adopt this rule. So what the Dash 2 amendments basically do are provide statutory relief for that particular rule for the sub-regional analysis. The city of Hillsborough has partnered with the rest of the cities in Western Washington County. Not a small feat to have all of the five Western Washington County cities working together. They've coordinated and worked together on a long-term development and land need opportunity analysis. Not surprising, really, that analysis has demonstrated long-term needs for the three important industrial clusters in and around Hillsborough. And those clusters are high-tech, the solar industry, energy manufacturing, and biopharma. The reality is that in the long term, there's not enough land to accommodate those important industries to the state of Oregon, but to the Hillsborough region. And this particular bill and these amendments would provide Metro the opportunity to look at sub-regions within the Metro boundary. Doesn't require them, doesn't force it, doesn't mandate it, but does allow it. And I think that's an important differential. This is critically important, I think, to the long-term economic health of the communities in Western Washington County. We have important economic clusters, quite honestly, that that help to fund a lot of what goes on in the state. It's important to the state of Oregon as a whole when you look at the impacts of high tech in the state. When you look at the direction that we're headed as a state in green energy and the attraction of Solar World and other solar manufacturing companies to Western Washington County, when you look at the siting of Genentech in Hillsborough and the opportunity to attract other biopharma manufacturing companies to Western Washington County, the need to, unfortunately, or however you look at this, the need that comes along with those industries is land. You got to have a place in order, a place to put them, the place for these large industries to put their buildings in, that helps to grow the jobs that are important to the economic health of the state and of Western Washington County. The Dash 2 amendments are obviously a redraft of the bill as it was originally drafted. I think that they're a step in the right direction, and we look forward to, Madam Chair, members of the committee, working cooperatively with Metro in fine-tuning these, if there's fine-tuning that needs to be done, and moving this bill forward with both the fix to the urban reserve issue that comes in the Dash 1s, but also this opportunity for Metro to look at the urban growth boundary expansion on a sub-regional basis. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I'll let my esteemed colleague from Hillsborough in the lower chamber also testify.
I'll ignore that.
Welcome, Representative Riley. I call it the other chamber.
We were all there, too.
Chamber.
We were all there
recently
once.
Have come from that other chamber.
Right.
Thank you. I hold so fondly in my heart.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Chuck Riley, and I do represent half of Senator Starr's district, the half which is Hillsborough, Corneas, and Forest Grove. I also support both the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments to this bill, but I wanted to talk just a little bit. I don't want to repeat what the Senator has already so ably talked about. We don't need to spend more time on repeating what other people have said. But one of the things I wanted to touch on is the fact that the concept of sub-regionalization would allow Metro and other districts, if they so desired, but especially Metro, which is 50 miles across, to look at the need to put not only industrial land, but housing in the same area, and would cut down on long transportation needs when they end up putting industry in one spot, because they can only look at the region as a whole and put housing somewhere else. This would allow them to look at subregions and put both those needs in the same spot. I think that's really important. I'm going to let the experts talk more about it, but I wanted to bring that point forward and just speak in support of both of these amendments. So.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Just another point, just to recognize that there's a number of folks that have come from Western Washington County to testify today. I appreciate the public hearing and the opportunity to get these issues on the record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We'll look forward to hearing from them. Any questions for our esteemed colleagues from both houses? Both chamber, I should say, before we let them go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will call up. We have a couple of folks, panels, that would like to come up. Jan here?
John.
Okay. So this is Jan. Don Otterman and Richard Myers. Okay, gentlemen, come on up. If you have written testimony, if you can hand it to our committee staff. And I'm also going to ask if you have written testimony, if you cannot read your testimony, but please just summarize, that would be helpful.
It's short.
Thank you.
It would take me longer to summarize it than it would be to read it.
Okay. Why don't you go first, since
okay.
You've got some written testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm John Holland, Community Development Director for the City of Forest Grove. On behalf of the City Council and staff,
I want to express my community support for SB 566-2. Forest Grove is located at the western boundary of the metro region. It has been historically a balanced community that provided job opportunities for its citizens. As a community has evolved, there has been an influx of new residents without the opportunity to provide new jobs. This constraint is due in large part from the limited availability of sites, particularly larger parcels, to accommodate new industrial facilities. The largest industrial site in the community is 34 acres, with most sites less than 5 acres in size. This situation makes it difficult for the community to compete for new companies that are part of emerging industrial clusters currently beginning to locate in western Washington County. Based on studies developed for the 5 cities in western Washington County area, there appears to be opportunities for these companies to locate in the area likely not found elsewhere in the region. Taking advantage of these opportunities would allow the area to contribute to the economic engine of Oregon. Based on our experience in recruitment of high-tech companies, if we do not create the ability for these companies to locate here, they probably will not locate in Oregon. The proposed legislation allows Metro to consider unique characteristics in determining the need for additional land for particular subregions. With the adoption of this proposed legislation, it provides local jurisdictions to make the case and Metro the ability to consider expansions to capture new industrial growth in the green economy. Any questions?
Great. Thank you. Any questions? We'll hear from the next panelist. You could state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Otterman. I'm City Manager, City of North Plains. What I'd like to do is to address specifically subsection 4B of the bill. Excuse me. As I'm sure that you may not be aware, North Plains is not located within the Metro Service District. However, we are directly adjacent to Hillsborough, and the Metro Service District boundaries are separated by, at this point, about 3 to 4 miles. We are impacted by the growth of the Hillsborough area. However, during our urban growth boundary expansion that we accomplished about 5 years ago, we could only look at the demand that was for the City of North Plains jobs to housing ratio and the population growth from the existing city, and could not look at the subregional demand for jobs, and which do impact us being so close to the Metro Service District. I'm also speaking on behalf of the City of Banks. There's some communication from Banks, and the City Manager of Banks couldn't be here today. He asked me to include Banks in my comments to the committee.
And we have their letter as well.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. The cities are not located within the service district. The bill subsection 4B allows those cities to consider amending their urban growth boundary to accommodate the specific need identified by the district. This is extremely important to the cities of Banks and North Plains because the impacts of development within the Metro Service District do not stop at arbitrary lines and will have profound effects on our communities. It is also important from an economic development standpoint that North Plains and Banks be allowed to capture some of the spillover economic development from development that will occur within the service district to enable our cities to develop a well-rounded communities with adequate jobs and housing balance. For these reasons, the City of North Plains and the City of Banks are speaking in favor of the Dash 2 amendments, more specifically subsections 4B. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm Richard Meyer, Development Operations Director for the City of Cornelius. Thank you for considering Senate Bill 566. It's a matter that will encourage, we hope, the Portland Metro Regional Government to consider sub-regional characteristics, needs, and growth management decisions in their facilitation of regional urban planning. I'm happy to represent Cornelius, that is a designated severely distressed city of 11,000 people at the western edge of the Portland metro region. We're different from the average Portland area community in socioeconomic makeup, in tax resources available to provide public services, in job availability for residents, in our need and room to grow. And along with our sister cities, you'll hear the opportunity to attract green industry that could not be located elsewhere in the region. We have asked Metro many times to look at our local needs, plans, resources, and our local promise to make urban growth and planning decisions that fit Cornelius and to allow this bootstrap community to develop into a healthy, sustainable, livable part of the greater regional community. Cornelius urban plans meet all state and regional goals and objectives, but because of our size, location, and lack of clout, we cannot show that our local needs are the needs of the whole region. That's been required in the past up till now. Our requests are, as one Metro councillor put it, statistical noise. We have run into the wall of Metro's 30,000-foot elevation view and their broad-stroke decisions repeatedly. Just last summer, our city's cries to add a few acres of partially urbanized land to the UGB so owners could build an industrial park were turned down in an application process that this body made possible when we came before you 2 years ago. Metro said they could not consider our sub-regional need, and we could not adequately show a regional need. And as the Metro Council president said, it would set a bad precedent for process for other local jurisdiction requests for UGB adjustments. Our community is in danger of dying on the vine. We choked from lack of land and false choices. Choose between density or sprawl, we're told, business or environment. And we hear the simplistic theme, grow up, not out. Well, we know, and you know, Senators, that managing human and environmental development is a difficult task of balancing varied important interests. So rather than bringing legislation to you this year that would allow Cornelius to secede from Metro government, we are supporting Senate Bill 566 to allow Metro to look at more local characteristics and local needs when setting and adjusting the UGB. To allow, I underline, allow Metro to do the right thing and look at local characteristics that affect the futures of so many. Our city needs a land use and growth management system that supports diversity, local choice, and more than a one-size-fits-all option to attain more efficient and earth-friendly living arrangements and connections. We hope this legislation will allow that.
Thank you. Any questions from this panel?
Yes, ma'am.
Senator House.
Could you gentlemen give me a hypothetical or maybe an example of the kind of problem you run into under the current law that Dash 2 would resolve or help with?
The example I mentioned last summer when we were, so that we would support the two-year extension of the five-year cycle for urban growth boundary expansion 2 years ago, we were offered a process to apply for urban growth boundary expansion just in Cornelius. This is the acreage that I described. We went through the process, were affirmed, approved by a hearings officer, but then the Metro Council reversed that and decided, no, we couldn't because of process, because of the need for us to show a regional need for our UGB expansion. And a small community can't do that. So this would allow communities to describe and to prove their need locally for expansion of the urban growth boundary and run through the criteria that way without having to be experts on Clackamas and Multnomah counties as well. This would also, as you heard from Hillsborough, another major example, allow the Western Washington County jurisdictions to show the need and that it can attract an industry that needs the flat land and water that Western Washington County has that no place else in the region has, no place else in Oregon has. And so the jobs that we're talking about in the future that we can prove that we need with this bill are not zero sum. We're not taking them from Portland or anywhere else in Oregon. We bring in these green jobs, and that'll be a benefit to the whole state. Hopefully this will allow us to do that.
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the committee, from the perspective of the city of North Plains, when we are not yet within the Metro Service District. When we expanded our urban growth boundary approximately 5 years ago, we had to, as far as jobs to housing ratios, we had to look at the existing city, the existing population, the projection of population growth based upon historic population growth, and then determine the amount of land necessary for commercial and industrial based upon that historical growth without considering any of the impacts of the subregion. And there, with the growth of Metro and being as close as we are, there is spillover effect from that growth. However, we were not able to look at that, to consider the amendments of our urban growth boundary, taking that growth into consideration. And so because of that, we are, I would say, probably heavy on residential and don't have enough land for commercial and industrial to supply the jobs for our community to enable them to not have to commute to other locations to work. One of the goals in our comprehensive plan is to provide jobs so that the people that live in North Plains can work within North Plains. However, we can't get there because we can't consider the sub-regional demand and the sub-regional need. And this bill would allow us to do that.
Thank you, gentlemen. We have some other folks who'd like to come up, so I'm going to need to move on here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, Denzel Schiller. And then I have people listed that did not sign up, so I'm going to read off these names that it was presented as a panel, Deanna Palm and T.J. Buhler. I don't know if they're here. Okay. All right. If you can state your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Denzel Schiller, Chairman of the Board of the Greater Hillsborough Area Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to make a couple of brief comments in support of the Dash 2 amendment. The Chamber strongly supports the amendments, which will provide Metro with an important sub-regional urban growth boundary tool. Providing for adequate industrial land for emerging clusters, such as the silicone solar energy manufacturing and biopharma industry, is a vital and daunting task. In looking at forecasting for future growth, a collaborative approach among cities will be essential in order to meet that need as well as maintain each community's aspirations. These amendments grant the level of authority needed to develop a thoughtful plan for the future. As an income tax-based state, providing jobs in Oregon is paramount to achieving those aspirational goals. It's imperative that we are prepared for the recovery and that when we have provided for the ability to quickly grow back those jobs that have been lost. These amendments will set forth the ability to work together to ensure economic prosperity can be achieved and quality of life maintained. We encourage your support of the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 566. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Sarah Jo Chaplin, and then I have Terry Kerner. Terry Kerner here. All right.
Is that the other person that you called out in the first one?
It wasn't on the list, but Deanna Palm? Okay. All right. Can you go ahead?
Honorable Chair and committee members, my name is Sarah Jo Chaplin. I'm the city manager of the city of Hillsborough. With me, I have Pat Rebellier, our planning director, and Janine Rudstad, our senior planner. I have two main points to make. The first is that the high-tech silicon solar energy manufacturing and biopharma industry clusters in the county are like anchor businesses. And in order for them to continue to be successful, they need their clusters around them, the smaller businesses that help provide them with the goods that they need in order to do their work. In order to keep these businesses here, their clusters need to be successful. The city of Hillsborough does not have the land to fully meet the need of these clusters, which is why, as a region, we need to be considered with the other cities. It's like a biosystem that works together. In order for those industrial clusters to continue to succeed, all of the cities need to be considered as a sub-region where different cities' lands are also used for businesses that support those anchor businesses. The second point that I want to make is that the proposed sub-regional tool is not a new concept. It was originally adopted by LCDC rulemaking in 2004, but was set aside by the court because its details did not completely satisfy the UGB expansion rules set forth in the applicable statute and state planning goals. The court nevertheless expressly recognized that a sub-regional UGB land need approach can be a proper basis for UGB expansion. Amendments proposed in the Dash 2 address and cure the flaws that the court found in the LCDC sub-regional rule adopted in 2004. The City of Hillsborough urges this committee to accept the Dash 2 amendments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have your written testimony here, correct?
Is this That's correct. Yes. Yep. So.
Okay. Do you want to add anything to that? Could you state your name for the record, please?
For the record, Chair Dingfelder and Senators, my name is Pat Rebellia, Planning Director for the City of Hillsborough. And it's just to reiterate the latter half of the written testimony, and that is that this is not a mandatory, this is an authorization for the Metro government to be able to use the tool. But they can, as written, they can choose not to do that. And we are very sensitive to their concern about keeping an efficient and tight UGB boundary. And this will be but there will be instances, as you've heard today, where there are some specific land needs that may call for, on policy grounds, the creation of subregions. And the way the bill is written, the way the amendment is written, it's a very high standard to meet before that subregion approach can be applied. You'd have to demonstrate that the place that you want to fulfill that need is the only place in which you can effectively accommodate that need, keeping in mind that you have to follow, as the Dash 2 amendments say, you have to apply a regional analysis. So it's not a very low threshold, it's a very high threshold. But there will be instances, as you've heard, over time, as tonight, in this next UGB round, but also in subsequent UGB rounds, because Metro reviews its boundary every 5 years. So we're trying to provide a tool that can enable them to use this authority when all the policy reasons align, and there is a very, very special need that can meet a very, very high threshold. Thank you.
Do you want to add anything to that?
Janine Rustad, City of Hillsborough, for the record, and I do not have anything to add, but we're willing to entertain questions.
Any questions for this panel? Senators? No? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a couple more folks that would like to testify. I guess you called up Terry, right? So Mary Kyle McCurdy, and then I actually will ask Dick Benner from Metro if you want to come up and speak on the Dash 2 since we didn't give you a chance before. And John Chandler's lurking. So I don't know, should we have him come up with this body? But there may be.
Yes.
Right.
In the center. I think that would be only appropriate. This is his worst nightmare, surrounded by 1,000 friends in Metro.
Oh, no, I've got way worse nightmares.
No, I'm one of his patients.
Craig Isles. Okay, and I see Bob Rindy. We could really make it pile on here.
Would you like me to start?
Yes, thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, Staff Attorney and Policy Director of 1000 Friends of Oregon. I'd briefly like to say that we do support the Dash 1 amendments that were offered by Metro. We think that under Metro's urban and rural reserves process, once they designate urban reserves, when there's a need for a UGB expansion, that UGB expansion should be made based on urbanization factors, where it's logical and efficient to urbanize next. But I'll turn to Senate Bill 566 and the Dash 2 amendments. We oppose the bills originally drafted and the Dash 2 amendments. They're both contrary to the notion of regional planning and why Metro has successfully existed for over 25 years. In the Portland metropolitan area, most residents live in one town, work in another, shop in several, and recreate yet elsewhere. It is a regional housing and employment market with an integrated regional transportation system of both roads and transit. There are no generic subregions in the Portland metropolitan area, and in fact, the metro area is pretty small when compared to the other metropolitan areas around the state with which we compete economically. For those specific uses that are truly local, such as school sites, or have unique needs, such as certain industrial uses needing access to a particular type of transportation system or utility provision, the existing land use planning program already addresses that and, in fact, has successfully done so in the Portland area. After the Court of Appeals overturned LCDC's subregional rule, which we challenged and prevailed upon and not on technical grounds, LCDC, supported by 1000 Friends, amended Goal 14 to make it more flexible to specifically address when there are needs for industrial sites that need particular transportation routes or have other land characteristics that are specific to that type of industrial or other use. And in fact, the Genentech example that you've heard described already is an example of that, where that site was provided through an expansion of the Metro UGB because of the Hillsborough and Washington County's argument that they needed sites with a particular type of utility provision that only that site could provide. And that's why we had the Genentech site. We are concerned that this is an attempt to make it easier to expand the urban growth boundary onto farmland rather than other alternative sites, farmland in Washington County. And the Dash 2 amendments we're mostly concerned are contrary to the process that was established by this legislature in the last legislative session under Senate Bill 1011, establishing giving Metro and the three counties in the metropolitan area the ability to establish urban and rural reserves. We're in the midst of that process right now. The same diverse group of interests that came together to support that bill is working together. Every local government in the region, Metro, the business community, the agricultural industry, natural resource advocates, citizens, are on various advisory committees, as well as Metro and the three counties regional steering committee, to designate urban and rural reserves. That is a very tenuous trust that came together in support of Senate Bill 1011, and it is working right now to designate urban and rural reserves by the end of 2009. In our view, the Dash 2 amendments are contrary to that trust that's been established and will threaten the successful completion of that urban and rural reserve process. And I don't say that at all as an idle threat. I am very concerned about that. I want us to have a successful urban and rural reserve process because I think it can be a great model for the rest of the state, and it can be, it is contemplated as being a way to end some of the controversy that has surrounded Metro's UGB examinations by designating urban reserves where Metro will expand the UGB for the next 50 years in exchange for establishing rural reserves. This bill is contrary to that trust. So that concerns me a great deal. Thank you for consideration of our comments.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Are there questions for Ms. McCurdy? Senator House.
Thank you. Mary, this is not a trick question, but can you refresh me on the sub-regionals approach to schools? I remember that issue from some years back. And could that approach work here?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator House. There are several different ways in which schools can be sited now through an expansion of the UGB, one of which is in current law 197-298. There's a provision where you do not – let me take a step back. That statute establishes the priorities in which a UGB can be expanded first on to non-resource lands and then to resource lands, to just to simplify it, farmland being the last choice. However, you can go aside from that priority system. It is skip to lower priority lands, farmland, if you have a specific identified type of land need. And schools have been the one that has been most often used as an example for that. And, in fact, that has happened in the metro area in at least two school sites, one in the Dick can correct me if I'm wrong on this. One in the Westland school site was cited through that process, as well as in the Bethany area, as a separate matter from the larger Bethany UGB expansion. That's a great example of a specific type of identified land need that can only be met in one particular area. And I'll just look to Dick to see if I missed any other way in which.
Those are the two I know.
Yeah. So, in addition to what I already mentioned, that after, partly in response to the Court of Appeals decision on the subregional rule, LCDC amended Goal 14 and actually added language to it, which I don't have with me right now.
I think we have it in the packet. The City of Hillsborough provided that.
Okay, the new Goal 14 factors mm-hmm. allow to be taken into account the kinds of land characteristics that a particular use may need. And obviously, schools need to be sited within the district in which they serve.
Okay. Any other questions? Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here in support of both the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 5626. I'll keep my remarks very brief. I think that what you have in front of you is an opportunity to help move along a long-standing squabble in the metro area, where some of the cities, and particularly on the western side of the region, feel that they haven't gotten heard on some of the important issues that they believe are specific to their locations. And I think the Dash 2s in particular will allow that conversation to move forward. I don't necessarily agree with Ms. McCurdy's assessment that this will damage the 10-11 process. I think it may actually help move it forward a bit. It is a long-standing dispute. This is a very difficult issue. Metro has a very difficult task in front of them, trying to balance all of the various interests and equities. I think the attempt being made here, though, is to highlight that the idea of a sub-regional piece may actually have some merit in this broader conversation about proper urban form and development. We commend them both to you.
Thank you.
Glad to take questions.
Any questions for Mr. Chandler?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Benner?
Dick Benner for Metro. Very briefly, as you heard from earlier witnesses, Metro joined with Hillsborough and a couple of other local governments, or actually a lot of local governments in the region in 2002, to address the notion of planning on a sub-regional basis. We got to the point where we agreed to submit a rule to LCDC. We worked over the rule for many, many months. The commission adopted it. It was appealed to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals found fault with it. That was in 2002. It's now, 7 years later. I would emphasize a couple of things that have happened. In fact, you've heard about them today, a couple of things that have happened since 2002 that I suspect may well change my council's feeling about subregional. I want to state that the language that you're looking at in the Dash 2s, we only learned about maybe 2 days ago. And we have not, I, Randy Tucker, have not had an opportunity to talk to the council about it. So we would like to have that conversation with the council. I think among the things the council will be thinking about are the changes that have happened since 2002. One is, Mary Kyle just referred to it, the amendment to Goal 14. I was on the work group, and John Chandler was on the work group, that advised the agency on those amendments. And I took with me language expressly intended to address some of the concerns that you heard expressed by supporters of the Dash 2 amendments, to allow Metro, to make it clear that Goal 14 would allow Metro to look at special needs or specific needs around the region and focus on those parts of the regions. That's one thing that has happened since 2002, and we signed on to the subregional rule. A second one is, of course, the entire urban reserves and rural reserves effort, going back to Senate Bill 1011, that's now well underway. We're over a year into it. One of the purposes of adopting a new path for designating urban reserves was to get away from the priorities for identifying urban reserves that were in the old LCDC urban reserves rule. Collectively, the region thought that there were good trade-offs to make for that to make sense. We came to you and asked you to provide a path, and you agreed that it made sense. It became law. So we're going to be looking all around the region, including at farmland, to satisfy the long-range urbanization needs. We will look at the west end of the region, the south end of the region, the east end of the region, and we will designate some of those lands as urban reserve. I think that responds to much of the concern that you've heard here, because previously we were bound by the statutory priorities when we expanded the urban growth boundary. There was one other thing that was mentioned, I thought. The North Plains concern. One charge that counties have, and within the metro boundary, metro has, that is often overlooked, is the coordination responsibility. The Dash 2 amendments, if you read Section 4B carefully, as I have, here's what they say. If there is a need, particularly for employment land that arises in the metro area, it can lead to an urban growth boundary expansion by North Plains or Banks. From the regional perspective, I don't think that makes any sense. What should be happening is the population coordination that is required by you in Chapter 195, which makes Washington County the population coordinator for cities outside of our district. What that means is we should be having, and we are having, a conversation with Washington County about the needs that arise within our district and how they should be distributed. So there could be a conscious, planned decision by Metro in conjunction with Washington County that we would decide not to accommodate some particular need in the region as a whole so that North Plains could expand its urban growth boundary to accommodate it, or Banks. But that comes from population coordination under 195. What I'm afraid of is the sub-2s here, particularly Section 4B, is going to end up pitting the metro region with North Plains, with Banks, with other cities in the region that are outside the district, vying for what we end up in our analysis says is a regional need without this population coordination. I'm very troubled by that part of the Dash 2s. I think, I just saw it 48 hours ago or 24 hours ago. We've promised Hillsborough that we would talk through these amendments with them, and we will do that, but we do have some concerns.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Benner? Senator Hess?
I appreciate your analysis of that. I know you object to the specific language. Are you saying that there's no way to address those needs or concerns through this bill, through the Dash 1s, or even a different version of the Dash 2s, that it should go that route that you just outlined?
No, Senator, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
We would benefit from conversations with the city. I wish we'd had them months ago. You may remember, leading into the 2007 legislature, the local governments made a very conscious effort to talk about an agenda to bring you long in advance of the session, and it was very successful. It gave the Senate Bill 1011. I wish that had happened here, but we can have the conversation with the city and see if we can figure out a better way than the tools we have already that you've heard about to address their concerns.
All right, thank you. All right. Thank you. Any other questions on this panel? Thank you very much. And last up, but not least, we have Bob Rindy from DLCD. Since I'd like to hear the state's perspective, since the LCDC has been mentioned quite a bit.
Anyone else?
Yes. Anybody else want to come up? There's a woman in the back there. Okay, Terry, why don't you come up? Why don't you come up? Because.
Yep.
Yes. And we'll let you go first because you signed up with agencies, yes. Thank you.
And I promise I will be very brief.
You can state your name for the record, please.
I'm Terry Kerner. I'm the executive director of the Forest Grove Chamber. And I don't think that I could say anything that any of the other folks haven't said already about support of Dash 2. The only thing that I have to say is that I'm fairly new into this system. I don't have the history from 2002 or 2004. I am, and don't hold it against me, since Senator Atkinson isn't here, I can say that. I spent 25 years in Southern Oregon, and I've only been up in Northern Oregon for a little less than 2 years. But as the director of the Forest Grove Chamber, the experience that I've had working with Metro and learning about how the whole system works on our side of the county, this amendment seems to me like a very important tool to allow us for some of the exceptions that I've seen that have been needed. I've sat through a lot of the rural and urban reserve meetings thus far, and I would have to respectfully disagree with Mary. I think it's something that has come out that it's more apparent to me than ever that we need these kind of exceptions and these tools to be allowed with the working on our side of the county as we work with Metro. Thank you.
Any questions?
Would you like to sit off?
Yeah. You can stay up there if you'd like. You can see firsthand how our state agencies work. Thank you, Bob.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Rindy. I'm Senior Policy Analyst with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And I also just saw these amendments, in fact, not even 24 hours ago. So I'm going to express some concerns about the Dash 2s. I did see the Dash 1s. I apologize if I said that wrong, and we don't have a concern with the Dash 1s, but having just seen the Dash 2s, I do have some concerns. I was able to get a hold of Director Whitman, and he's asked me to express his concerns as well about these Dash 2s. Again, I don't know all the implications of these because I haven't had time to go through that, but I do have a couple of things I want to emphasize that some others have mentioned already. LCDC, did, as required by Senate Bill 1011 last session, go through a lengthy process, including many parties in the metro region, to adopt a set of rules to ensure that Metro could adopt urban reserves in the metro region. This is a new kind of urban reserve, and it did require a lot of balancing and a lot of very careful thought on the part of LCDC in setting up a set of rules that would authorize this with a new set of priorities for land, for including land in the boundary. I think the Dash 1s are in keeping with that bill and with that process, and for that reason we hadn't originally planned to testify. I'm real concerned as to how the Dash 2s would mesh with that, though. I see in the Dash 2s that they would bring back the priorities that we have so carefully tried to balance and adjust in the 1011 process, and I believe one better with the Dash 1s. And so I don't think that these work with the Dash 1s, and I seem to sense that there was some feeling that they could go together. I don't know how we would adjust them. I do think we would have to do a lot of work on the existing rules, possibly on Goal 14 itself, to meet this new provision. We also are heavily invested in helping Metro succeed with the new urban reserve process, and we are part of the working group and have been working closely with other state agencies on that. And I am really concerned that changing some of the fundamental rules at this point in the process. I think it was just yesterday that Metro reached a major milestone in issuing a report on land need. So we are smack in the middle of a process with it that does have some timelines that are critical, and this does represent a change in the rules. I'm concerned that we might have to now stop take a look at our rules and somehow accommodate these new procedures into the rules on urban reserves. I don't know how we'll do that, and as I said, I'm not quite sure how we could. I think it was mentioned earlier that LCDC did adopt subregional rules. It was about 2002. I was also involved in that. Also a very careful effort to try to have reach consensus and have careful sidebars on that. This bill would reintroduce subregional planning in the metro region without a lot of those sidebars and a lot of the provisions that we had. And I'm nervous about that as well. I do know that it has been something that LCDC has long considered, and we have a long history of the issue of, well, can one jurisdiction accommodate the need for some other jurisdiction in their UGB? It's been an issue that's been around, I think, since the mid-80s, and we have some carefully crafted procedures and policies where we've on some occasions tried to deal with that issue. But now, in the way this Dash 2 introduces the notion that a neighboring city, be it North Plains, be it Banks, be it Sandy, could in some manner accommodate a need that was generated in the metro region, I do believe that would require possibly a reconsideration of the way Goal 14 is constructed. Again, another delay, I'm afraid, in the process that we're in the middle of now for Metro to adopt urban and rural reserves. So those are just in general the main concerns that I have. I can come back to you if you wish after we've had time to study this and give you some more detail. But at this point, I'd be happy to entertain questions.
Thank you. Any questions for the department? No? Okay. I'll look forward to hearing from Director Whitman directly. Thank you very much. Anybody else who would like to testify on this bill that didn't sign up? Going. Okay, with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 566, and I will close the committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Thank you.